Thank you so much for your presence here tonight. Appreciate the friends who have come out, and students who have come out, and teachers who have come out. I was thinking about this when y'all have so many song leaders, it's almost sinful. Some of us struggle in that category, and y'all are blessed here with great song leaders. I was thinking, as I was saying, they're not part of the sermon, so this doesn't count on the clock. In 2 Kings chapter 5, it's a story about Naaman. Most of us are familiar with Naaman. And he had leprosy, and he was told by he had been told by one of his servants that this prophet of God, Elisha, could heal him. And he went to Elisha, but if you remember, Elisha sent a messenger out to him and stopped him and told him, go dip in the Jordan 7 times. If you remember your study, that offended him, angered him. He was the King James. I brought my King James. This is my dad's Bible, actually. And I've got this is an old story I'm going to be talking to you about. But the King James said he was wroth. And that's an interesting word. But he was just mad. He told me to go dip in the Jordan 7 times. Remember, he said, I've got better rivers back home. And he turned and left. And his servants caught up with him, if you remember, and said, Master, if he'd have told you some great thing to do, would you have done it? He told you something that's so easy for you to do. Why don't you do it? And this is what I was thinking. I'm not going to preach on baptism or anything. Well, later I will, but not on this story. Here's what I want you to grab out of that story. Thank God for people who see us make wrong decisions and chase us down. Thank God that they have been placed in our lives. Those who love us enough, care enough, and have enough courage to stop us, to call to our attention our mistakes. Imagine if they would have, this is just me in the story thinking, they had to be a little intimidated to do what they did. A little bit anyways. Just imagine how bad it would have been for Naaman if they'd have said, he won't do it anyways. He wouldn't do it anyways. Or he may get mad at me. He may kick me out and I can't be a servant in his great house. And if they would have done any of those things, and if Naaman would have gotten back in his wagon and ridden back home with that leprosy, thank God. For people who run us down. And every one of us have been chased down, haven't we? And stopped. And someone who loved us enough, cared for us enough, had enough courage to say, don't you need to do this differently? I just bring that to your attention because the meeting is going now. There are some who are missing, and that doesn't mean they're going to hell for not being here. Some had things to do and stuff. But there are some who, and I mentioned this to you at the very beginning on Sunday morning, we ought to have a list, a mental list of prospects, of converts, of people who we love, who if they're making the wrong choices in life and they're walking toward hell, that we'll run them down, we'll call them, we'll do whatever needs to be done, and it may risk embarrassment, it may risk them not letting us be their quote friend anymore, it may do all that, but what else it might do, it might bring them to the Lord. And where Naaman came out cleansed, imagine how grateful he was to those servants. Multiply that by whatever, how grateful it's going to be when those people who run us down and correct us and help us, we run into them in heaven. What an awesome thing. And so I just encourage you, call someone. Well, they may not like that. Call nice. Offer them a pie. I'd do anything for food right now. And invite them. Run them down. Not with your car, but just go after them and correct them. Then I thought about this. You know, one of the problems, again, I'm not into the lesson, but this gets us into the lesson. This is the step up into the lesson. You know, one of the problems I think that exists in our society today, I think it exists in our work field, I think it exists in athletics, I think it exists in the church, and that's mediocrity. That's people not doing their job. Do you recheck your order at your fast food places before you pull off? McDonald's, Sonic, whatever. I saw the Sonic. One guy pulled up at McDonald's and said, "May I help you?" "Yeah, give me whatever you want." She said, "I'm sorry." He said, "Give me whatever you want. You're going to anyways." And sometimes it feels that way, but have you ever checked and done, and you just wonder, why can't anyone today do their job? Just do your job. Not ask anyone to do super, just do what you're, and that exists in sports. We reward mediocrity. We don't reward those who do extra and work extra hard. We reward the ones who don't do anything because we want them to feel good about themselves. And some of you may be all for that. I'll be honest with you. I'm not. You want to pat them and hug them and love them as mom and daddy. That's what you're supposed to do. Mediocrity, though. Now, I don't want you to take your kid home after striking out and spanking them. But I think that's ridiculous. But in the Lord's church, my goodness, we're not far from Fort Campbell. Soldier one time came back home to his church and they said, "Would you like to preach tonight?" He'd been off station somewhere and he said, "Yes, sir." And he got up and his topic was the army of God. And he said in his sermon that if the army of the United States was run like the army of God, we'd be in a lot of trouble. There's absentees. He said, imagine calling roll that morning in the army and so-and-so's gone golfing, so-and-so's gone on vacation, so-and-so just overslept, so-and-so did. No, they're held accountable. How much mediocrity exists in our service to the Lord? Colossians 3, Paul said, "In all that you do in word and deed, do all in the name of Lord." You do it in Jesus' name. One coach asked me, he said, he coached at Donaldson Christian. He said, "Joey, how do you put so much time into coaches when I was at Ezel? How do you put so much time?" He said, "I feel guilty sometimes that I need to be doing more church stuff and I'm giving too much time to my work." I said, "Whatever you do, you want to know the verse I grab hold of? Whatever I do, I'm doing it in the name of the Lord. I'm going to be pumping gas. I'm going to pump gas in the name of the Lord. I'm going to do it to His glory." If you go down six verses, you find verse 23. He said, "Do whatever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord, not unto men. Do it the best you got." I mean, the best you have. If you never, I've told kids who played for me, and I've had some of them do this, if you ever give everything you ever got, and you give your whole effort, and you play and you do it that way, you'll never be satisfied with the other again. And I think the same thing's in church work. I think there's people right now in the Lord's church who maybe used to really give everything you have, but you don't anymore. And I may be speaking to the wrong crowd. Maybe I should have done this Sunday morning. But you don't give all that you have. You give, but you half-hearted give. You sometimes give. You sometimes do. You sometimes are Christian life. You sometimes pour it all into it. And you know, that just doesn't, that's not what it's about. Every one of us come up to a time in our life, and it's not one time. It happens so many times, I guess, in all of our lives, where we come up to that wall. You know what I'm talking about? That wall where I've got a decision to make. And it could be a spiritual wall, a family matter wall. But I've got a decision to make. How do I handle this? Am I going to, and I'm going to talk spiritually, not church work stuff, if I'm going to really be involved at the church or not? And involved at the church, I'm not talking about just attendance. No, I'm talking about attendance. I'm talking about what you do, what you're willing to do, What you're constantly, I've always been, God has blessed me with people who have pushed me. Joey, why don't we do this? I could tell you so many stories where they I've had kids who said, let's do this, let's do that, and they pushed me along. Where's that at nowadays? You know, I got this from Jerry Barber. I used to tease Jerry that I quoted Jerry about as much as I did King James. If you know Jerry Barber, you'd understand that a little bit. But Jerry made this statement years, years ago, and I've hung on to it, and I've watched it, and I think it's true. You have the kind of church you want. Wherever you go is the kind of church you want. You go to a do-nothing church, that's what you want. You're just a Sunday morning, that's what you... Do you know why, he says? You're absolutely right. You have the church you want, or else you change it. Or leave it. You wouldn't keep going to it. But you have the church you want because that's what it is. Or you would make changes. And God knows our congregations in the Lord's church need to make changes. We need to prioritize again. We need to step back. And when we come to that wall individually, because the church is made up of individual members, and we come to that wall, how do you handle it? I was coaching track one year. I was actually student teaching. I was helping the coach do track. We were running against this other team, and it was in the district tournaments of it. And they had the fastest guy in the tournament in our district. And we had a guy who was right there with him. And Maurice was fast. Back then, the tracks were cedar tracks. If you remember, gravel, I guess. It's like running on gravel. And so Maurice was going to beat him this time. And he took off, but Maurice took off too hard, took off too fast. And he was ahead of him. But right over in that corner of the track, he hit that wall. They call it track. His stride left him. Now he's fighting every step. He turns his corner, but he's ahead of the guy. But now that other guy, he's churning it, staying just like he always did, and he's catching Maurice. And they get in, and I was young then, and I'm on the infield, and I run down to this end, and I'm running along with him, yelling at him, encouraging him. And the guy's catching them. And they're coming upon this line, and they get right at it, and the boy's at Maurice's shoulder. And Maurice is all out of stride. And he dives across that line before the boy did. Fell in those cinders, rolled, cut himself up. It was the wrong line. He was about 5 yards short. The boy beat him. I teasingly say he rolled into second, but he did. We ran out to him and picked those pieces of gravel out of his skin, dusted them off, told him how proud we were of him. He gave everything he had. Is that you? You hit that wall, but you keep going? Whatever, I've always been accused of burning the candle at both ends. I think, you know, Jesus probably did that. You know, I think. I can't see Paul saying, oh, I'm burning a little too much candle here. I better slow down so I have more time. When you hit the wall, what do you do? When you're tired of church, what do you do when you're tired of church? When you're tired of religion or when you're tired of standing up for religion, standing up for God, what do you do? I'm going to tell you a quick story tonight from the Bible. It's found in Esther, the 4th or 5th chapter. And it actually goes through more than that. Esther chapter 4, the storyline. And you can follow it if you want to. I'm going to be referring to different parts of it. I'm not going to give the background of it. Let me just tell you this. Esther is a Jew who's been picked in a beauty contest to be queen in this foreign land. They don't know she's a Jew. She's just beautiful, and that's all the king was interested in. And he picked her. Her relative, who had been raising her as his own child, her parents were dead, Mordecai says to her, "Don't tell them you're a Jew." And so she goes on and she's in the palace. And Mordecai hangs around. I mean, that's his daughter, if you will. And he's watching things from the outside. There's this guy named Haman who gets in good with the king. And just, it's a great story. I hate skipping it. But the king makes a rule everyone has to bow down. But Mordecai will not bow down at Haman's feet. Won't do it. Haman then works out a deal with the king to kill all Jews come a certain day. And they put it on signs throughout the area. Didn't have, you know, Twitter stuff. They had to go pin things up on trees and things. And so the proclamation went out that the Jewish people would be killed or be open season, if you will. And they went out after them, or they were going to go out after them on that day. Mordecai, someone brought him a proclamation. He read it. And he's why this is going on, but it's a religious stand he's taking, and a moral stand, and he's going to stand. And he tears his clothes and he puts sackcloth on. He goes outside the palace and he sits in view of Esther. Now that's where the chapter starts. First few verses, if you're looking at that, tell you that he's down there mourning and she sees him. The first thing she does is send clothes to him. And I wonder if it's not a little bit of embarrassment involved. Just me inside the story. The first thing hit her was to, here, give him these clothes. I told you young people pushed me at a group one time and said, why don't we get rid of the Playboys at that little market down the road that we do our business at? And I said, well, we'll see. And long story short, and it's a great story. We go in and we ask him to take them off. And he does. He takes them off. One of the parents, though, had stopped her daughter from going. It wasn't a kid's job, she said. The adults should have been doing it. Well, where were they? Where were we? I was the adult. He asked me that day, he said, Joey, why has it taken you so long to say something about it? I didn't want to say anything about it that day. But I said, I don't know, maybe I was scared. Sometimes you can be at that point where you're embarrassed when really you can't let embarrassment stop you. You can't. She sends someone down, she says, see what's wrong with him. And he sends the word back up. And he says, it's time now for you to tell them you're a Jew. I want you to tell them that. And look with me in your Bible, if you will. I've written, so look at this. See all those notes? This is why I brought this Bible. From so many different sermons, there's so many ways I could go in this. But I just noticed this little thing up here. Esther, sometimes being queen, she's going to fall into this little thing of forgetting who she really is. Christians do that too. Get successful at work, get successful here, get these friends here, and we sort of forget who we really, really are. And she says, what's going on? And he tells them, and look, if you will, at verse 10. Again, Esther spake. She sent back to him Hatach, her messenger, and she gave him the commandment to give Mordecai. This is what she says. All the king, he knew this, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know this. This is common knowledge, that whomever, whether man or woman, shall go unto the king who is not called, there is one law of his to put them to death. If the king does not summon you, but you go running up to the king, you're dead. And she says this, she says, there is except such to whom the king holds out the golden scepter that he may live. But I, and this is the part I have underlined here, or highlighted, but I have not been called to come unto the king for 30 days. You know what I've written out on my sideline? For me to remember where I think she is, there's this law. You know the law. Everybody knows the law. You can't go in. He has to summon you. He hasn't summoned me. Here's what I wrote on my side. Man, I wished I could. You know? I wished I could go to him, Mordecai, but he hasn't summoned me. He could kill me. It's a law. Everybody knows that law. And it's been 30 days since I've been summoned by him, and I wished I could help. And it's sort of the pilot thing. Man, I wished I could dismiss this innocent man. Just wash his hands of the matter. I wish I could talk to my friends about Christ. I wished I could. I wished I could say something to that person or to this person. But you know, I'm afraid, and whatever. And you know, here's the thing I really believe, and I may have already said this here already. You can have whatever excuse you want to. I didn't get into this Sunday morning. The song, "You Never Mentioned Him to Me." Wow. And it can be for any reason you want to. It just doesn't matter come Judgment Day. I could have told you, but you don't have to go any further. But doesn't matter. And he said, hardly when my kids would give me an excuse, I ran them. Just automatic. Go run. I don't care. This is why I didn't do it. I don't care why you didn't do it. You have to do this. We've lost that attitude. What do you feel like you have to do? We're more of a society that feels like it has to be done for us instead of us doing the serving. Jesus said, I came to serve, not be served. And you remember one of the last lessons he taught his disciples washing their feet? And he said, this is what I'm telling you. You be the servant. We are a group of people who sometimes forget who we really are, forget our mission, forget the idea that I'm supposed to be doing these things. And sometimes we just sort of wash our hands of the whole matter and say, oh, I wished I could. I wish I could talk to my friends at school. You know, the best time, I was a youth minister 25 years, the best time to do an attendance drive to me is during school when all of your students are in school. I ran an attendance drive at my church when I was at Ezel, and I had on, I was young. I didn't know you couldn't do this stuff. Back then, though, you could, back in the 70s and 80s. I put on my wall, we have an attendance drive coming up at where I'm at, Smith Springs, and I want y'all to come. And kids started signing up, and I knew what I was doing. If they can see people signing up to be there, you know, they'll come. You know, kid came up to me and said, Coach Ben, may I go to the bathroom? And I said, did you sign up? No, sir. No, can't go to the bathroom. And he said, no, seriously. I said, no, seriously. Going back to your seat. Now, I was going to let him go and just, man, I was watching him. You can get body language as a teacher. You learn when to say, okay, go on. And he didn't have that yet. In the moment he got up, he came up, Coach Ben, I'm going to try to come Sunday. I said, well, sign up, buddy, and head on out there. And you know, we had so many that Sunday that we took the auditorium and the adults had to go back in our little classroom. I had a lot of people had to use the bathroom that week, and that evidently helped our drive. But, you know, our purpose in this life is to bring people to the Lord, to do service for Him. And somebody say, well, my friend's doing drugs and I can't really talk to him. And you wash your hands of those people. And listen, I believe with all my heart, if Christ came back, those are the ones he'd be talking to. We sort of hang around, and this can go so many different ways, I don't mean for it to, but we sort of hang around the goody-goodies and forget the sinners. And I don't tell my young people to go hang out with a bunch of sinners either. I understand Jesus was... But man, that's why he came to the earth. For us to go out and reach those people, say something to those people, warn those people. Oh, I wish I could, she said. But I can't. Oh, not a good first response. Now, I've got another Bible. I just bought me another Thompson chain I just love. I've had this one for so long. And I've written a new note in it. Not a good first response, I wrote down in there. Not really a good one. Not really thought out. Have you ever done that? Your first response to things not be good ones? And again, thank God for second chances and third chances and fourth chances. How many times has an invitation been extended and God's word had touched your heart and the song started and you almost responded, but you didn't? And then you got another chance and you did. This was a bad choice, she said. She said, I wished I could, but it's against the law. Man, he gets on her pretty good. Look at verse 13. Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not within thyself, this is King James language, think not within thyself that thou shalt escape the king's house more than all the Jews. Well, all he said there is, Jews are dying, you're a Jew also. I don't know if there was a little threat behind that or not, but just a reminder. Verse 14 is the one I love. For if thou altogether holdest thou peace at this time, then shall there an enlargement and deliverance rise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. I love that verse. It's a preaching verse, isn't it? It's a preaching verse. You and your house will be destroyed. You know the honest truth. The church, I don't want to be baptized tonight. The church is going to go on with or without you. The gates of hell cannot prevail against a church. The Lord is going to come back and call His church to Him, and He's going to take them home. With or without us. Whether I do my part or not, that's going to happen. And Mordecai is telling her, this is going to happen. We're going to be delivered with or without you. Here's the only question, and this is powerful. Here's the only question being decided. Not are the Jews going to be delivered. We're God's people. We're going to be delivered. Are you, Esther, going to be delivered? I could start right over here and just go around. Say, are you going to be delivered? Who was the old-time preacher, W.A. Bradfield or Bradford? They said he snapped his finger. He held a meeting at Old Hickory and had 100 baptisms. And he snapped his finger. They said when the invitation song was singing that he'd get out here and he'd walk. And he'd do that. And you're standing and singing. You know, you hate making eye contact with a preacher during, just, I don't know why it is, but we do. And he's looking and he does this. He does just what? Hey, are you ready? Are you ready? How about you? If he came right now, would you be ready? And he's snapping. And they're singing, just as I am. How about you? How about you? You know what it does? When I heard a guy preach this and tell this story? When that finger points at you, you know? It's me. Am I ready? He's right. As long as we sit in a crowd, we're sort of like that woman who grabbed the hem of his garment. And she fell back into the crowd and thought to hide herself, the Bible says, from Jesus. Worst thing you can do is hide yourself from Him. Only chance we have is to be found by Him. I mean, and he looked, and he looked. Thank God for His persistency. The disciples were saying, let's go, let's go. No, no, no. And the Bible says when she saw that she could no longer be hid, she said, I did it. Stepped toward Jesus. How many times in an invitation call have we been that woman back in that crowd, hiding out of fear, needing to step, needing to be the one out there, but scared for some odd reason? Someone said to me, it's scary to walk down that aisle. You don't have to tell me. I've done it numerous times. I've walked that aisle. It's scary. But you know what is really scary? Walking out those doors. Lost. Every one of us. If we leave lost. Now that is scary. And then he said something to her. He said, we're going to be delivered. How about you? And then he said this. This is my favorite part of the verse. How do you know that you haven't been placed in the kingdom right now for such a time as this?
How do you know, Esther, that you weren't born beautiful? I mean, she didn't make herself beautiful. She was born beautiful. How do you not know that everything that has happened to you has brought you God's deliverance, God's hand, has through His providence, has led to this very moment? Maybe this is what you're here for. I used to tell my kids this. You think you have third period English. I still do this in Bible sometimes. You think you have third period English because you just happen, you know, the guidance counselor put you third period English. You think you have fourth period Bible or whatever because of, maybe it's because God has placed you there because in that room is that person that God has you there to help. You know what, that takes us back Sunday morning. That requires us to have our heads up. Have us looking around. See who it is I can reach out to. Who in here might need me? West Nashville Heights. I'm running down the steps. I'm in charge of the VBS. It's 1 minute till 7. And if you don't start on time there, you know, good night, elders meeting and all that stuff. And so I'm hustling. And it's a couple minutes before, and I'm going down this last flight into the room. And this man's sitting there on the steps crying. Older man, crying. And I say, hey, how you doing? And Pat, we were combined with Charlotte Avenue at that time, having a combined worship, VBS. And I stop, and he's crying. And so I go back to him, and I really do look at the clock. And I go back to him, and I say, are you all right? Are you okay? He said, yeah. He's still tears, crocodile tears. And he says, you know, today's the 7th anniversary of my wife dying. For some reason, it just hit me. And I just sit down beside him. And here comes Jerry, Barbara, hustling to beat that auditorium time. Well, I'm not the only one going to get in trouble here. Jerry. Listen, and the man told him, Jerry, stop. He stayed there with that man a little bit, talking to him. Man, I could have scooted right on by him. I'm sure there's many I have scooted by. But you know, if your head's up, this happens at school. I can walk to, hey, come here a second. What's wrong? You all right? You can just see it in some. Maybe this is why you're here. Isn't it better to think you have a purpose instead of just stuff happens? We were at Short Mountain Bible Camp. Where did y'all go to Bible Camp? We've been going to Short Mountain for a long, long time, and Fall Creek Falls before that, but we were at Short Mountain, and when they cleaned the mess hall, anyone here ever been to Short Mountain? When they cleaned the mess hall, they used to take those big old picnic tables, which weigh about 3,000-4,000 pounds, and they push them up on their ends. Then they bring a hose in there, and they're cleaning it all down. But you imagine a picnic table, you know how they are with those cross legs and big, heavy one. Well, my wife has left my son under my watchful care. But I'm closing things down. I'm talking with the guy. We're getting ready to leave. And my son comes running in, and he does what a kid does. He sees that thing, and he says, wow. And he starts climbing. And he climbs it, and he gets to the top. And I haven't paid any attention. He's there. I haven't paid any attention. We've cleaned the cabins. We've cleaned the restroom. Yeah, and I'm just going through the checkoff list. Mike has gotten to the top, and he gets on that leg, and he pulls it. But when he does, he finally gets enough leverage that he pulls the thing down. And it's coming down hard. I mean, hard. And if it hits him, it goes through him. It's that big and heavy. And he just dead. And it was right there, and I turned just as it started to fall, and I couldn't get there. But yet it was like it was slow motion, and it came down right at him. And I looked, and I'm thinking it's going to hit him dead center mass, and he's dead. And he kicks at it. But he's so little, when he kicks it, it moves him. Slid him just a little bit. And it came down, and it landed right beside his foot. Then I immediately thought, it's crushed. It skinned it. Just skinned it. He was bleeding a little bit. And I went over to him, worked out a deal, gave him $5, don't ever tell your mom. Fathers understand that. But, you know, I got so scared after the event. I don't know if you've ever been in something like it's like it being after an accident where, man, I'm sitting there with him. He's crying a little bit. And I'm saying, man, and so we're driving down the mountain heading home, just me and him. And I told you Andy Griffith moments with Opie. I had another one with my son. We're driving down that mountain, and he's, Dad, that could have killed me up there. And so I turned to him. I said, yeah, that could have killed you. What were you doing? And I'm driving, you know, talking to him. He said, no, I mean, that really could have killed me. I said, yeah, son, that could have killed you. He said, why don't you think it didn't kill me? Why didn't it kill me? I said, well, because when you kicked against it, the momentum of it pushed you enough out of the way. And I gave the logical. And he said this to me. Dad, do you think maybe I didn't die because God has a purpose for me down the road? And I thought about it for just a little bit. Again, I believe and preach that stuff. But when it comes at you, sometimes you don't even recognize it. And I said, yeah, Mike, that's very possible, son. And he got the biggest grin. It hit me. I've used it so many times in stories telling people, when you live your life with a purpose, if you go to school, those of you who are in school, and you're going just to learn all the math and all the English you can, you're a nerd. And I say that with love, but... You know, there's a lot more at school, and that's not the most exciting stuff that's there. And a lot of kids don't have, they blow opportunities that are there for Christ. That you can reach students in there and get them coming to your church that your preacher could never talk to. But you can at your work, where James will never see them, but you see them every day. Maybe you don't have that job just because of the paycheck. Maybe you have that job at that plant or in that workforce thing just to be there at that moment for a specific person who needs you that day. Maybe something is going on today that God has you here for. Now you tell me that's not a more exciting way in which to live one's life? To understand all things work together for the good to those who love the Lord and who are called according to His will, His purpose. God, whatever you want to use me for today, use me for it. Whatever it is. Don't let my eyes be down. Let me see that kid who's hurting. Let me see that person who is wandering off, like I was talking about with Naaman. Let me see them. Give me courage, give me strength to say something, to do something. Help my compassion that I may love them enough that I'll stop and hug them and say something to them. I'm a hugger at school, and someone years ago told me this at some teacher seminar, and I started doing it. They said some of those students that's only hug they're going to get all day long. And so I that made a difference when I heard that. You know what Esther did? Word gets back up to David. Esther's at that point in her life. Do I or not? Do I or not? And she has to decide. She said, if I perish, I perish. If you don't have anything in your life that you're living that's worth dying for, then your life's really not worth living. I don't think a person is really a disciple. I mean, in the truest form. Until they're at the point in their life where they're willing to die for Jesus. Not just talk, but living not only to die for Jesus, but something that's even harder, I think, to live for Jesus, to live for Him, to run through the walls, to overcome discouragement, to help all those that you come in contact with, to do everything with all that you have, that you might make it to that other side. Ephesians 6:13 says this, love this. We're talking about the armor. It says, and having done all to stand, when this life is over and all the dust is settled, you be standing for the Lord. You be standing. Yeah, but no, I want to stand. The story of Esther is so much, there's so much more I haven't been able to give you. I'm out of time. But let me tell you what time we're at. We're at that time, that point, where some of you are going to make a decision. That wall, if you will. I don't know if it matters about public responses. I know it matters about responses. I hope in your heart you'll decide what you need to do, and I hope that you'll do it. No excuses offered, none accepted. You do what you ought to do, what you really want to do. My Lord is waiting, if you will, with open arms, asking for those to come who would come, and He's willing to forgive you of your sins. Some of you may need to do that with a prayer as we're singing. Some of you may need to do it in a public manner. If there's someone here who's not a Christian, we want you to respond tonight that we can baptize you. The one thing you don't want to do is go out that door or that door lost. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? We're going to stand and sing. I hope that you have the courage, intelligence, to respond if you need to. Won't you stand, please?